So what I'm going to share with you is a thesis. I mean, literally, it's a PhD thesis, but it's a new philosophical argument that I'm proposing, a way of understanding the world that kind of crystallized in my little mind over a number of years. And so hold it in that spirit. It's an offering, as it were. Is this a more adequate way of helping us understand what's actually going on in the knowledge of all the foolishness of even trying to do that? So it was triggered by, I'd spent years and years immersed working with spiral dynamics as a model, you know, done all the trainings with Don. We'd done a lot in the Netherlands. And I was starting to feel a little unease about the kind of linearity of the model, even though it swings from, you know, the two different sides and things. But there was still something, particularly one of the things that was particularly sitting with me was, how come there seems to be lots of evidence that ancient societies had very high levels of technology that were often also linked to consciousness, but they apparently were down at, you know, purple and stuff. So how does all that work, you know? So I was stuck with that. And then I came across a guy called Dylan Newcombe. Actually, it was one of those cosmically organized things where he's a dancer and a choreographer and researcher. And he'd been into Wilbur for a while as well. And he said to some of his contacts, who can I talk to about spiral dynamics? And they said, well, go and find Peter Merry. And it turned out that we lived 10-minute bike ride from each other. So we got together, and what Dylan was doing is he was doing an experiment where he put hundreds of dancers through a workshop, and what he was trying to work out was, how does sound and movement and breath relate to each other? So we got dancers to do some, like, 8 different vowel sounds, like ah, or ooh, or oh, and see what happened to their body when they made those sounds. And then he added an in-breath, so an ah, and an ah, in and out. So we got to a pattern of 16. And what he saw was that across all these hundreds of dancers, there was a pattern that emerged that when they made the certain sound, their bodies tended to do the same thing. And they started to feel the same kind of energetic dynamic in their body as they talked to each other about, well, how does that feel? And then somebody said to him, have you looked at the I Ching? And he said, oh, no. So he went to the I Ching, and the patterns that were in the I Ching matched almost identically what he had discovered through a purely embodied research experience. And then he began to see how those patterns seem to tie in to the spiral. So this is a particular way of putting an I Ching description into it. But what we discovered, and this was what kind of triggered the research really, is that there is an energy dynamic that, you know, from the first 4 systems that is different. So I'm not going to go into the details about it now. But what you'll notice is that at this point, it flips. It mirrors. Can you see that if you look at it? So the set of 4 here at blue reappears at orange, but in a slightly different order. And the set up here at green is the same set as red. And the set at yellow is the same set as purple. And the set of turquoise was the same set as beige. And the way the dancers described it, it was the same movements, but above blue, above the central point, it became more refined. So there was something. So the basic energetic dynamic was the same, but it was a more refined version of it. So that really got me kind of thinking that there's something going on here. We also noticed that the chakra systems, when they played with those with the dancers, actually showed up in between the value systems. So they were almost like transitional functions that enabled you to move from one to the other. And of course, the heart showed up right at the center, which seems to be the center point, you know, where the mirror is, as it were. So this was all very curious to me. And it, because it had come out of an embodied research practice, it wasn't just a kind of thing that someone had thought up, it really had energy to it for me. So I started to explore what all of this might mean. This was another way of looking at the relationships between these different systems. So the resonance between that there was between beige and turquoise. And what did I have next? Yeah, so when I started to look into this more, what we saw is that it was almost as if you're holding, like a beige and turquoise, it's like holding a polarity at two extremes. And that rather than you just kind of moving up, it's like something's moving in and something's moving up at the same time, like a kind of breathing process of breathing out and then expanding out again, so that it actually goes kind of beige turquoise into yellow purple into green red into orange blue. So what did those systems have in common? Well, purple and yellow are both about connecting. Well, let's say first, beige and turquoise are both unity systems, right? Beige is unconscious unity, and turquoise is conscious unity. Purple and yellow are both about systems for connecting. Red and green are both about identity. And blue and orange are really about manifestation. So it seemed to be that the actual manifesting happened at the central systems, in between the central systems, that something was coming in, and it felt, when you talk to the dancers about it, at its most granular, right at the orange-blue kind of interface. That's where the movements were all about, detail and differentiation and concretization and grounding and things like that. And they got increasingly subtle as we moved out. So it's not that turquoise is fully manifest here. What happens is as beige emerged, it has an echo to turquoise. As purple emerged, it has an echo to yellow. And then what happens from the middle point is that orange has to integrate blue to fully crystallize. Green has to integrate red to fully mature. So you know the mean green meme story, right? And yellow has to integrate purple to fully crystallize. And how many integralists secretly are doing shamanic training? Quite a few of them. If you talk to, they're starting to get into all this mystical stuff and maybe feeling a little guilty about regressing to purple. Well, you know, no. This is a perfectly normal part of the process. And turquoise needs to integrate beige in order to crystallize. So when you're working with energy, you have to work with it through the body. The body's the instrument that feels the energy. If you ever do dowsing, see people douse, it's not about the quality of the crystal on the end of your dowsing chain. It's the micro movements that your body is making to give you the information from the field. So the more you stretch up, the more you have to dig your roots down to ground into the body. So, now I'd come across this from Marshall Lefferts, this whole idea of the torus. And when I was listening to him, what really got me was the idea of a tension between two poles that triggers this toroidal movement. So there was just an intuition that there was something about this particular way of describing the process that would match the kind of insights that had come out of the embodied research. So you can kind of see it like this way, in a way, stuff coming in, stuff coming up, crystallizing out at the center. Maybe it's two. Nassim Haramein, you know, suggests it's a double torus from the new physics work. Okay, so that was the starting point. Now, between then and what I'm going to present to you now, the 7 years of PhD research, but I've only got 12 minutes left, so I'm just going to get to the conclusions. You can read it all online at volutiontheory.net. So an acknowledgement first that there is this dimension that we can't really put words to. So I'm not even trying to talk about that. Okay, well, that's absolute is absolute, and that's that. So what happens when we start to get into the relative? Okay, what's the kind of biggest picture, in a way, of the relative? So this is what's been called the unified field, Buckminster Fuller, this architecture, that's this geometric architecture that's kind of stable and ready to move, to come into movement when there's an impulse. In a way, you can think of it like an ecology. When there's a need, when there's a niche in an ecology, it creates a vacuum that puts a pull on the unified field to start the manifestation process. So why does anything ever manifest? Because there's a niche in the ecology. There's a need for it to be born into the world. And that creates the pull, or sometimes you may have seen pictures of the universe with a dent in it. You know, you have the flat unit and then you see this dent. So it creates a dent that starts to attract things through the causal into the gross, through the subtle into the gross. Manifests, and it's a picture of the universe, manifests at that center level. So there's a 90-degree plane. Stuff is coming in, and then a 90-degree plane is the level where it manifests. So this is the simple way I've been trying to explain it to myself, apart from anything else. Whenever anything emerges, it emerges as a seed and potential at the same time. So if it's born as out of a niche in an ecology, there's a seed, you could say, in the grounded material, and there's a potential field of information about what it could become. Okay? That tension creates the surface field, which we can call the brain or the membrane. So you have to think of this as wrapping around, as it were, and information is stored on the brain or the membrane. That's where the information of the system is held. Oops, sorry, let's go back a minute. So you can see here, you can't really see it because of the light, but this is the surface membrane, as it were, seed potential. So you got the potential and the seed, and they create a creative tension. So they create a pull for something that's wanting to manifest, and it goes two ways. It grows up like a plant would grow up, and the information informs, literally, comes into form. So there's a growth together of the original seed, kind of packed with power. You know, a real seed is packed with power, connected to its information field of what it can become, and they grow into each other. That's the way it works. Through the heart, ultimately at the center. And it then manifests at that 90-degree plane in the middle of the tension. So, you know, when I was looking at this, there are many traditions that have described different elements of this. You could see the language of a sacred father, the unified field. There's this kind of big oneness around us that's not the same as God, because that's, you know, beyond that. But once we get into the relative, there's the many that manifests at the center, and there's the process of things coming into manifestation that we, you know, has been called spirit or subtle energy. So in a way, you've got this field, you've got the stuff that's manifesting, and you've got everything that goes on in between those two things, right? And then you've got the bits that are usefully left out of our current traditional religions, the feminine, the sacred mother at that grounded level that completely accepts everything as it is, and within the many, both the Christ and the Mary as examples of that. So the story we've told ourselves this story in many different ways through many different traditions, and we've given it labels and names dependent on the context that we come from. So are the labels I gave it, well, you've got this container basically around, you've got the manifest reality, and you've got the dynamics that go on in the process of something coming from the causal through the subtle into the gross. If you look at this as a universe, more from a physics perspective, you've got the black hole at the center that connects both to the deepest inner layer, but also the most extreme outer layer. Right, so at the center, there is that kind of, you know, if you ever do heart exercises where you go into your sacred heart and it's completely still, that's that center point. That's also the black hole outside of us. So this is how I kind of, having read lots of stuff, gone to lots of courses, contemplated my own experience, how I see this process unfolding. I should say I chose... It was a conscious choice to work at the octave level. So to say, I'm going to choose to just look at the dynamics. If we take it as an octave, whereas not Graves' set of six, but as an octave, what does it look like? So this octave is now describing it in four different phases. So we're in this tension field, right? This is all about the manifestation process. We're in this tension field between seed and potential. First thing that happens is the energy is built up within the boundary of the seed. So the seed still has its own identity, its own boundary, and it's building energy. You could see that kind of, in a way, like the beige purple phases. And so what I'm doing is, in a way, I'm trying to describe a pattern that I've come to through spiral dynamics. Spiral dynamics would be one expression of that pattern, but a pattern that's obviously more universally applicable is my thesis. Next phase is that the energy starts to break through the boundary of the seed. So to really think of it as a seed, you know, the sprout sticks its head up above the soil to expand. So in the first phase, beige purple equivalent, me and the other is one. You know, so that's when the child still believes it and the mother are one thing. It has no differentiation has happened. In the next phase is when the energy breaks through to expand. There's the differentiation that happens between me and the other, you know, into the red blue. In the third phase, the energy continues to expand. So information is coming in, right, from the potential field, and the energy from the seed is continuing to expand from the initial push. And at that point, it's able to look back and reflect upon itself. So up into yellow, green, orange, green. And then in the final phase, the energy slows again, integrates all the pieces, and encapsulates all the elements into what actually becomes a new seed. Okay, so what happens, all the healing that goes on here as we revisit, you know, the early, particularly the precognitive stages of beige and purple, to heal all that stuff that's, you know, locked into our system through earlier traumas. Other people have described it in other ways. This could be seen as the lunar phase, the solar phase, the integration phase, or original participation, separation, final participation. You know, it's been described in different ways by different people. The sense is that up until the midpoint, morphic fields, right? Just to make an assumption now, we can look at it later. Morphic field being a field of information that stores patterns from past experience. That ultimately, in the first half of our journey, our behavior is formed by the existing patterns in the field. So we're unconsciously, as it were, driven by the patterns in the morphic field, or the cosmic grooves, as Ken would talk to them, and then about them. Then, as the self-reflective capacity comes online, we're able to start to co-create, in a way, create new cosmic grooves, or start to shift the cosmic grooves, or new patterns in the morphic field, to be able to embark on our own mission. So there's a relationship here between the freedom as we grow up and the need to integrate stuff in that process. So as I said, if a tree wants to grow its branches higher, it has to dig its roots deeper. In this cycle, you can see it going like this. There's an impulse to grow, right? For any of us, any part of our process. That impulse to grow brings in more consciousness or more light into the system. That light enlightens our shadow, right? The greater the light, the clearer the shadow, yeah? When we work with that shadow, we release the energy that is needed for us to grow to the next stage. That's why you can't separate involution and evolution, and why you can't, you know, shadow work is just core to the ability to grow, because energy is locked in the past that's needed for the system to be able to take its next step. So light expands, and love is what enables us to connect to the pain, as it were, and heal that. And that goes through different phases, you know, of expansion in the system in not a very elegant graphic, but trying to represent the kind of holarchical nature of it, as it were. So freedom and integration go hand in hand. Light and love go hand in hand. The energy creates a cocoon as a seed for something completely new to emerge. And the whole thing starts all over again. Right. So the process goes on at every level in dynamic embedded natural hierarchies, holarchy in our language, and here are examples in nature, like pictures of a plant, the same thing. This is the information field, the soul of the plant is there at the moment that the seed comes in as well, and they grow into each other. It's not a one-way linear growth process. information and soul involve, and the material and the seed evolve in the process of evolution. Thank you.